1983, the voice of opening days and presidents, Charlie Brotman. The game, Kansas City Royals 7, Baltimore Orioles 2, at Memorial Stadium in Baltimore, Maryland. The attendance, 51,889, on Monday, April 4th, 1983. It was sunny and 60 degrees. Hall of Famers, Orioles first baseman Eddie Murray, shortstop Cal Ripken Jr., and Royals third baseman George Brett. Game highlights. Baltimore fans warmly welcomed new manager Joe Altobelli, but his team fell flat in front of the second largest baseball crowd ever at Memorial Stadium. While his predecessor, Earl Weaver, played golf that morning in Florida, Joe began his opening day with Bryant Gumbel on NBC's Today Show and ended it promising more wins in the future. He was right. The 1983 Orioles would go on to win the AL East, beat the AL West champion Chicago White Sox in the ALCS, and beat the Philadelphia Phillies in the World Series. The 1982 AL Rookie of the Year, Cal Ripken Jr., started his 141st consecutive game on opening day, 1983, and notched the first of 102 runs he would drive in over the course of this MVP season. For Kansas City, future Hall of Fame third baseman George Brett homered and scored three times for the winning Royals. The story. For most 22-year-old men in their first job out of college, taking off work for opening day 1983 might seem unlikely. But I had the privilege of being an overworked, underpaid disciple of legendary DC sports and entertainment publicist Charlie Brotman. 3 years earlier, I was offered an unpaid summer internship at Charles J. Brotman & Associates. I pounced. The opportunity to learn from a master like Charlie was like no other, and I loved every minute of the work in his cozy little sweatshop in the summer of 1980. Among other things, I got to work the press room at major events like the PGA Tour stop at Congressional Country Club, Kemper Open, and the Volvo Grand Prix men's tennis event at the Rock Creek Tennis Stadium, the Washington Star International. I returned for a few weeks in June 1981 to work at the Kemper, but this time I told Charlie I'd need to make a few dollars. Very few, as Charlie was notoriously frugal. And he agreed. When I graduated from Notre Dame in May 1982, a job was waiting for me. Charlie had been the public address announcer and promotions director for the first iteration of the Washington Senators from 1956 through 1960. When the team moved to Minnesota, they asked him to come along, but he declined, opting instead to open his own small public relations firm. He continued to handle the public address announcing on opening day for the new Washington Senators, first at Old Griffith Stadium in 1961, and then at the new D.C. Stadium, renamed Robert F. Kennedy Stadium in 1969. He would play a similar role for the Nationals when Major League Baseball returned to Washington in 2005. Charlie's first opening day at the mic led to another unexpected announcing job, one that would last more than 7 decades. On April 17, 1956, President Dwight D. Eisenhower was at the presidential opener to throw out the season's ceremonial first pitch. It was also Brotman's first game at the Griffith Stadium microphone, so it fell to him to introduce the president to the friendly capacity crowd of nearly 28,000. The 28-year-old must have made quite an impression. After Eisenhower won re-election in November, a White House staffer called. Charlie recounted the conversation decades later. "The president has been looking for you. He'd like you to introduce him again." Humbled, I said, "Well, just tell me when and where." The lady said, "January 20, 1957. Brotman knew the significance of the date. For the second time, the diminutive D.C. native would be handling the announcing duties for the presidential inaugural. 8 years earlier, he was selected by Harry Truman's 1949 inaugural organizers as a student from the National Academy of Broadcasting to broadcast the first ever televised inaugural ceremony. The 1956 opening day encounter with Ike set in motion a string of consecutive quadrennial assignments for the bipartisan Brotman that would span 72 years and 12 U.S. presidents from Truman through Biden. Charlie never met a microphone he didn't like. As public address announcer for the Senators, he earned an uncredited cameo in the 1958 baseball movie Damn Yankees. In addition to baseball and inaugurals, Brotman also could be heard over the stadium sound systems at various tennis venues, from Madison Square Garden in New York to D.C.'s Rock Creek Tennis Stadium. In the early 80s, the professional tennis complex in Rock Creek Park was little more than a collection of portable bleachers, trailers, tents, a muddy parking field, and a rickety scaffolding that supported the press box, the perch from which Charlie would introduce the players and make other public service announcements. Now a seasoned announcer, Charlie would spread his wings on occasion. Over the course of a summer afternoon, he'd make a dozen or more requests for tennis fans to move their cars. "Your attention, please. Would the owner of a blue Volvo with Virginia license plates B2R6G2 please move your vehicle? Your car is blocking the driveway." They became routine. Then late in the day, Charlie would check to see if fans were still paying attention. "Your attention, please. Would the owner of a green Honda Civic with Maryland license plate V7R6W3Y9L5R2R7M1P3J9D. Please move your vehicle. Your license plate is blocking the driveway." A few would chuckle. By the third or fourth day of the tournament, the regulars would eagerly await the day's expected dad joke, while the first-time attendees would groan. During the January Volvo Grand Prix Masters at Madison Square Garden, well-heeled tennis fans sitting in front-row seats above the baseline routinely draped their winter coats over the railing. It was distracting for players at the opposite end of the court. Charlie had a unique way of solving the problem. "Your attention, please. Would the spectators sitting in the front row please remove your clothes?" Pause. Very long pause. "From the railing." And then the signature close that caught Eisenhower's attention and was so familiar to Senators fans at Old Griffith Stadium. "Thank you." By opening day 1983, Charlie had no current business relationship with the Orioles, but was well connected. Like me, he longed for the day baseball would return to the nation's capital. Baltimore partially filled the void while we waited. Orioles public relations director Bob Brown tapped Charlie to help out on opening day due to the influx of national media. Things were reasonably quiet at CJB and Associates. Our best-known client at the time, boxer Sugar Ray Leonard, had retired, or so we thought, at a star-studded charity event we staged in Baltimore 5 months earlier. The Washington Federals of the short-lived United States Football League, the original USFL lasted 3 seasons, were 5 games into their inaugural campaign, and the Kemper Open was still 7 weeks away. Since Charlie would be at Memorial Stadium, I had no problem getting the afternoon off from work. Due to my 4-year opening day detour through ballparks in Chicago, it had been a while since Roundy and I had been to Memorial Stadium. We were still able to figure out how to get there. As the game dragged on, there was only one thing keeping us at Memorial Stadium. After the Royals went up 6-2 in the 7th, I suspect Roundy was ready to go. I probably urged him to stay a few more minutes. "We can go after Country Boy." Instead, the Orioles unveiled a new stretch song, "That Magic Feeling," that went over like a lead balloon. After a cascade of boos, they brought back Country Boy an inning later. It was too late. We were already in the car. More on Country Boy in Chapter 1994. 6 months later, I was sitting in my office late on Tuesday when Charlie called from Game 1 of the World Series. "How quickly can you get to Memorial Stadium?" he asked. "With traffic, probably an hour and a half, boss. Why?" "They need an extra sound system for the post-game press conference," he explained calmly. I need you to get the PA system out of my closet and get up here fast. There will be a parking and press pass waiting for you. I don't remember the drive and didn't see the game, but I distinctly remember meeting an Oriole legend that night, Charlie's pal and Memorial Stadium public address announcer, Rex Barney. Rex had pitched for the Brooklyn Dodgers in the late 1940s, including four seasons with Jackie Robinson. I would later work with Rex at Home Team Sports, but tonight I was awed to meet Mr. Barney, the man whose voice and two signature lines were well known. Ever since he began as the Orioles public address announcer in 1974, whenever any spectator caught a foul ball, he would instruct the ushers to give that fan a contract. His other signature line? I think Rex might have borrowed it from his friend Charlie. Thank you. For box score, play-by-play, and a picture of Charlie and Roundy, visit openingday5050.com.